Good morning and welcome to this workshop on the Anxiety Project. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Ashwani.
So this is our opportunity to look at how we practiced with the second assignment that we sent out, the submissions from our fellow practitioners, as well as the response that the guide posted to those submissions. A few words before we begin on how we are in virtual workshops. We conduct all workshops in the privileged environment, which in a virtual workshop means keeping custody of the attention. Please conduct the call in a quiet location that minimizes distractions and supports your complete focus on the workshop. Please take responsibility for maintaining the silence by ensuring your device is muted at all times unless you're actually speaking. And when speaking in group, please speak from personal experience and please refrain from addressing other participants. All right. Jen, are you ready for the first caller?
All set. Thanks, Ashwani.
Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
This is Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Jen. Well, I'm very excited. I had this insight just like maybe 30 minutes ago. So I've really been working with this. I just really want to really work with it. So I've been listening a lot and just really working with it a lot. And so, trying not to make this too long, but I knew I wanted to participate in the workshop today. And then there was a big flurry of self-hate. Yeah.
Jen, you are strobing. Tony, I can hear you clearly.
Okay.
Can you hear me, Tony?
Okay.
I can hear you, Ashwini.
I'm going to change my configuration here. One moment.
Sure.
Okay, Tony, how's that?
Sounds good to me.
All right, excellent. So you're very excited. You had this great insight 30 minutes ago. You've really been wanting to work with this. You've been listening a lot, working with it a lot, and...
Yes. Well, and there was a flurry of some self-hate earlier. And, I mean, questioning so many things, which I might bring up as well. But what I got to through with the knowing the mentor is endlessly open to and interested in me, will not criticize or judge me, loves me and accepts me unconditionally. I thought, you know, I get to participate in this workshop in my life. I don't have to do it right. I don't have to be good. I don't have to understand. I don't have to be more advanced and more sophisticated in practice. You know, I don't have to be clear. I don't have to articulate everything perfectly. I can, you know, who I am as I am right here, right now, I can participate.
Wow. I mean, it's so remarkable when we have those moments of clarity, isn't it?
Yes.
Because that's it. I mean, and it's so, you know, when you said, Tony, that you really wanted to work with it and you've been listening a lot, it's a funny way to say it, but when you are reading all of what you just said, it's like that's the reward for it. You know, not in a punishment, reward, good person, bad person way, but in that sense of getting to the place of really perhaps, you know, suffered enough in the sense of I get it. I get what this suffering is doing to my life. You know, this assignment comes out, you really see the value of it. You work with it. You listen, you listen, you listen. You know, you're recording, you're all the different things. And then this clarity is there for you. All the things that we always say that they always come out in all of our assignments, but from what you're describing, you have a direct experience of it.
Yes. And I love it. And it was not what I expected. I thought, I was going to, like, you know, have this deep understanding of what Siri's talking about, and I would like, well, I really, I guess I am, but.
I was going to say, well, I don't know, Tony. I think maybe, uh-oh, yeah, I think you did.
We say that. Yeah, yeah, it's like, I thought it was, I guess, more of a, I don't know. I just thought it was going to be different, that I would be able to speak very articulately about, I don't know, ego and all this kind of stuff, but this is much better.
Much better. I'm so glad you said that, Tony. Yeah, because what I hear and what you're saying is, without, I mean, we would never say it to ourselves this way because it would sound ludicrous, but almost like, well, once I get it, then I'll meet all of ego's standards, right? I'll be this person that I think I should be and all these. But it's, as you say, it's much better than that. What we get to is you're perfectly, I mean, I was going to say perfectly fine, but way more than fine, lovable, inherently good, exactly the way you are.
It's just remarkable.
It is. It really
is. So there's not big enough words for how much I've appreciated all of this, all that went into this assignment and all I've been able to do with it. And it's
exactly.
Yeah. It's just remarkable.
It is remarkable. It's truly remarkable. And really, yes, gratitude for everything that goes into all of the things that are offered to us. And as you say, that crucial piece of what you brought to it, you know, that willingness and that, you know, the effort and the time and attention and care that you brought to the assignment.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, Tony. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jen.
Hey, Jen.
Hey. I have loved this too. The response from the guide I've had on, you know, almost a constant loop with like a rotation of a couple other things, and just hearing that again and again, like we're, you know, we get that opportunity to bring that unconditional love to an adult going through this life. And it's just so helpful. And you know, I know people have talked about these kind of things recently. It's just, it's so fascinating to watch the place of, like, I hear it and it's like, oh, and then as soon as the recording stops, it's like gone. And then I hear it again, you know, so that's fine. Like, it's great to just keep going to. And the unconditional love. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, just to not to miss that particular point that you're making, right, Jen? So the particular line that caught your attention is that we're mentoring the adult. The whole reference to the child was simply the process of compassionate acceptance. But what we're doing is bringing that unconditional love to the adult going through existence, right? And so that grabs the attention, and if we're listening on loop to it, the attention is on the message, and that's what we're hearing. However, as soon as the recording stops, within quotes, there's a forgetting of it, which means that the attention has shifted to the other loop that we're constantly hearing.
Right, yes. Yes.
Yeah. And so we have to actively have the attention on the one that we choose to hear, rather than the one that we are in a default position to hear.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. That's so helpful. Yes. Yes. And I feel like I'm just... Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No. Please, go ahead, Jen.
Well, I just feel like I'm in like a unconditional love, like koan or something. I don't know. I just noticed things, like, it's funny. It's just interesting. Like, you know, I mean, forever I've heard the guide, you know, I choose unconditional love, right? That's always offered. And sometimes there's like, I choose peace or something offered too. And there's often been this preference of like, oh yeah, I kind of like I choose peace. Cause I don't really get, like, I choose unconditional love. Like, what's my, I don't experience that in the way that I experience tea. Like there's also this whole like resistance thing that comes up. Like I'm told that I don't, you know, get unconditional love as much. It just feels like what the heck is unconditional love? And, but of course I know that's not true. Like I have so many places in life where I'm clear about having experienced unconditional love, you know, maybe for another or maybe for this person. So it's just, I think I'm just seeing like the level of barrier to unconditional love that I'm just like supposed to believe that I can't bring that to this person or here or whatever.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
It is because what you're in is an inquiry because you have, so if I may, I think this is a furthering of the conversation we had on open air, right? Because
yeah.
what ends up happening, so you're listening to the guide on loop, and that is the totality of your experience, right? That's all you're listening to. When the attention flips to the other thing that you're listening to, what you're listening to, and this is what we can't see, is a conversation about how you don't know what unconditional love is. You don't get it. You don't. And the you that is being referenced there is what I'm identified with because I say, what the heck is it? I don't get it. And so we can't see that we are listening to a loop there.
Hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the hardest place to disidentify from is the place where we believe most we are ego. The person who does not have the ability to understand or know what unconditional love is also a conversation.
Yeah, and the practice reminder that came through about today, I think, about radiate love by keeping all the attention on love. It felt like that was right in there too. Like, because I think that's what you're saying. Like just, you know, keeping the attention on love, that is the experience. And I don't have to understand it. I don't have to go off with that thing. I don't know. I can't even talk about
yes,
it, but I just feel like, yes.
No, you are talking about it because it's an accurate experience. Because what we're closing in on, it's exactly what the last conversation was about. When I'm enlightened, it's going to feel this way. So I'm looking to feel this way. Unconditional love, there's some assumption about how it feels. And because I don't feel it, I'm not having the experience. Rather than getting it, which is the hardest thing to get, but the reason I'm not having the experience is because I'm listening to a conversation. My attention is on a process of not having the experience. It is not, the attention is not on a process of having the experience.
Yeah, and when I drop all that, the experience can be there. Right.
And that's what it's unconditional about it, is it's what it is. Right? Here I am listening to the guide talk about unconditional love, and somehow or the other, that is not the experience of unconditional love. Now I have to leave that and go find an experience of unconditional love, which I can't find, and that's the story I end up living in.
Yes. Can I just lastly ask one place that I was recording, and because I feel a little bit, I just want to check out the direction. Like, I can't speak here. So I was looking at, you know, recordings like looking, I don't know, I think they're still kind of looking for that place and that experience, but, you know, there was, I think, some sense of a mentor, like, I'm here with you no matter what, like, I don't care what goes on or what you, you know, are told or, you know, what, like, it doesn't matter, like, I'm here with you, and that felt really, and then there was kind of that place that I've sometimes heard us talk sort of about, but like, you know, and if you're not feeling that and I'm sorry, then I wasn't there, and I'm sharpening my skills so I can be there with you. And so I'm working on that to be able to be there with you always. And sometimes I might not. And I didn't know if that was like going off someplace unhelpful or what was going on there, but yeah.
So I'm not sure I'm tracking, Jen. Are you saying that that's something that the mentor said that somehow or the other, that the that the mentor is sharpening her skills to be with you because you're not feeling something?
Yeah, and that's when I was like, who is this? I don't know. Right. It was kind of like, okay, sometimes I wasn't there and I'm sorry, you know, and so like I'm sorry that you didn't have that experience of being held in love. So I'm working on that.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of what it seemed like the mentor said, but I don't know.
Well, rather than go to any of those to the figuring it out, which is the process that we don't see that we're in, right? We don't see the process of conditioning that we're caught in because we're identified with the person being talked to. It doesn't feel like that, but that is true. Here's a helpful place to look at it. If the guide says something and you don't get it, do you project that the guide is not in a place of unconditional love?
No, I project I wasn't there.
There is a sense of, I know the unconditional love is there. My job is to look to see how I can experience it.
Okay. Know the unconditional love is there. I'm looking to experience. Yeah.
You know, that because the guide would never say anything except from a place of unconditional love.
Yeah.
Right? So then there's curiosity. So clearly, if I'm not within quotes having that experience, and I accept that it's because I'm listening to something other than, I'm listening to a loop that is an experience of not that, then I'm in the process of calibrating to the place the guide is coming from. But I'm not in the place of questioning whether or not unconditional love is there.
Yes, the unconditional love is always there, and I'm calibrating to be able to tune into it.
Yes, and so we mentor the person who's attempting to have that experience.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
I think I got
not
stuck in
question
there.
Whether the mentor is able to give you the experience or not, right?
Right. I think I went into like, what, you know, it is the figuring out, like, you know, how should the mentor sound to be unconditionally loving or some weird place?
Perfect.
That I got you.
Good for you.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I'll keep listening to this. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jen. All right. Here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Dana.
Hey, Dana.
Hi, Jen. Well, right after I read the guide's response, I had an experience I've never had before. I was just sitting in a chair, and I had this experience of who I am in my warm, golden heart. And just like radiating love, and like feeling her sweetness, like the sweetness of my heart. And I just was there for, I don't know exactly how long, just long enough to really experience it. And there was just so much generosity in that place. It was really, it felt, I mean, it was, you know, authentic. It was who I really am.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
That what you got to really experience after hearing the guide's response was really dropping into what you actually are. And it was both the assignment and the response from the guide were wide open invitations to that, Dana, weren't they? And so there you are. You're sitting there, you're practicing with it, and you just drop into that place of that. Did you describe, was it golden heart? Is that, that was a beautiful phrase you used. Yeah.
I'll never forget it. And, you know, it was, you know, from being in the process of the anxiety workshop and all that practice of just kind of unfolding towards that, and then just kind of, I guess, like the final walls coming down, and that was what was there. And then after that, there was a whole process of, you know, I started trying to figure out, well, who is that? When was I her? You know, and I like, because she was seemed young, and then I was trying to think, what age was she? And then I couldn't really, like, I knew I knew her, but I couldn't find an age when I was her. And then I just realized, like, this is my heart, and there's been glimmers of her all along, but not as much as I got older, because she just got more and more covered up, like, by the conditioning, but she's still always there, because it's my heart, it's who I am, it's, and, and the other piece, once I understood that, the other thing that happened is that conditioning did everything it possibly could to take it away from me, and for about 2 days, I couldn't re-experience it. I was totally blinded, and of course, part of that was trying to have the experience again.
Yeah, of course.
And,
well,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, Dana, and it makes so much sense, right, that, well, first of all, exactly as you described, you know, they're all those, you have an experience like that, and you can just know that conditioned mind is going to go into overdrive to cover it over, right? To take it away for all the reasons you talked about, which is to realize, as again was in all the assignments, and we've already talked about it twice this morning, that that is what we are. It's not something we have to make happen. It's not something we have to change about ourselves. It's not something we're learning. It's what we are. That's really all, it's a huge all, but what we're about in practice, right, is returning to that, is to recollecting that, right, to go to the year-long assignment. And so then all of that, what you describe of sort of, well, how old is she, and when did I have that, and when was that, you know, so often, at least for me, is the first movement away from it, right, to kind of think about it and make meaning about it and parse it a little bit. And no wonder you weren't able to find a, quote, age for it, because it sounds like what you got to is, well, that's authenticity. We arrive with it. We have it our whole lives. But for most of us, it's really, really covered over by all these other things. And in practicing with it, what you find is you realize it. You recall it. You're able to experience what you already are.
Yeah, it was so pure, and it was so sweet, and it was so who I am, and it was such a huge gift. It was so open, like the amount of energy that gets released.
I mean,
and that's why it's been challenging over the years, because, like, learning how to be with that kind of energy, it's a lifetime process. And the one other thing I wanted to say before I go is that it was really important for me to stay with and honor the process, because I think there's a way that when we're in that conditioning, I wasn't really ready to, like, I knew I was in the conditioning. I knew that's why, well, I didn't totally know that's why I couldn't recollect it again, but I knew I wasn't ready to, like, I was in fear, and I wasn't ready to allow myself to go back to the experience, because I've had experiences of going, like what we would call maybe like a hypomanic breakdown, where I've disintegrated a little bit too much. And so when I have an experience like this, I get cautious and want to make sure that I'm like sticking with reality. You know, the conditioning is a little bit protective in a sense. And I think it's like in the metaphor we've been exploring, I'm in the role of the child who needs the adult, and I was the adult as well, saying, it's okay, yes, there's a monster, let's explore it, and that I gave myself the unconditional love to be where I was. And
yeah.
by doing that, I was able, that allowed me to feel, to experience the feeling again, not as intensely mm-hmm. as the first time, but now I have it back again. The glimmers came, and now I can recollect it enough to tell everybody about it.
mm-hmm.
And so, like, the process of going through the conditioning and forgetting it, and then because I gave myself the unconditional love to be where I was, where I wasn't ready to experience it again, I now was able to release the conditioning again, and now it's integrated into my life. It's such an amazing process when you give yourself the unconditional love just to be right where you are. It kind of gives you everything.
It really does. It really does, Dana. And, you know, again, for me, you know, you'll have to look to see to your own experience, but a lot of sort of that conversation in the middle that, again, starts to make meaning out of it, and, well, I don't know if you're ready for this and that sort of thing, can get tricky. But really what you got to seems like the essential piece, which is that it's all unfolding perfectly. And that, okay, so you touched into it one day and another day it wasn't available. Not what I hear in that is not making standards about it. You know, you're not trying to get to a certain place. There's that unconditional love for all of it exactly where you are in each moment. And that is what allows you to actually experience it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That was a wonderful conversation. And Gesho.
Mm. Thank you, Dana. Gesho.
Thanks, Dana. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rob.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, what a wonderful call, and a wonderful sangha and supports. I had an experience that was the fruit of all of practice, but I think in particular nourished by the second anxiety assignment and the just extreme kindness of it. And as a little bit of context, the anxiety practice has helped me see that my anxiety stems largely from my version of got to do it right, can't do it wrong. You know, big price to pay for doing it wrong. And that in these last few weeks, it's been my turn to have COVID. So there's been kind of a lot of, oh, you don't have the energy for practice, and you're, you know, you can't, you're sick, it's not, nothing counts. But despite all of that, there was a moment, a totally memorable, clear-as-a-bell moment, where after all these years and all the different versions of this, formulations of it I've heard, the reality dropped in really clearly in these words, Rob, there's no way you can blow it. And it was just... it was like a silver glow in the body and just absolute certainty. Mm-hmm. And I think it may have come out of the context of practice, like there's no, but it clearly applied to everything. It was just as you and Sherry have been saying all these years, there's no way we can blow it. And it's been just this incredible kind of gift. And I've now just kind of playing with remembering that glow and that confidence and just facing situation after situation that's normally kind of frightening and just saying, let's play with, let's bring the, there's no way you can blow it to this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. It's amazing, right? The whole process of it, right? Rob, I think here you are at your most vulnerable, and that conversation comes up again for the purpose of maintaining the identity that you can blow it.
Right.
And so then we're given an assignment like the one we're given, or all the assignments that we're given in practice and in life, to have an experience of what life is, not what you are. Right? You
yes.
can't blow it. And there's nothing in life. Life doesn't blow itself, right? That means, however we want to say that, the content is, the content of the message appeals straight to the belief that is being maintained, and it shatters.
Yes.
And if we're there for it, because I project that we get those messages all the time, but there's a process that we have to put ourselves in of recognizing that, recognizing what we're not, so that we're ready to accept what we are, which is your practice. And after having done that over and over again, you were available for the metaphoric light to dawn, right? To become enlightened
yes.
in that sense of the word. And then if we're, and it's a peculiar thing, right, Rob? I don't know if this is your experience, but when it happens, when we're ready for it, what shifts is then what happens subsequently, right? Because now you're ready to play with the acceptance
yes.
of that premise rather than recover from the acceptance of the premise that you can blow it, which is sort of the first stage of the process, right?
Yes. Yes. And there's a way in which I think one way of describing it is that it doesn't show up in the category that I've been looking for it in. You know, I think I may have been looking for it in the category of the results of noodling, or, you know, the figuring it out. And all of a sudden, it's in this other category of experience that's much more like, have you seen the Eiffel Tower? Yeah, I've seen the Eiffel Tower. I've been there, I saw the Eiffel Tower. It's just a memory of something that very matter-of-fact that you saw. Like, oh, yeah, I saw that. Yep.
Mm. Both of which are really, really important to underline and sort of interleave through the conversations we've been having, because the expectation is that the, within quotes, the light will dawn in the process that is the problem in the first place.
Yes. Yep, exactly.
And so we're delightfully surprised that it arrives in a way that we never expected it to be. And kind of, you know, it's not the experience we expected it to be, because it isn't, right? It's in the category of itself, not in the category of the me, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, which is probably why it breaks through eventually.
Yes.
Breaks through
yeah.
that whatever it is that I'm in, that I'm swimming in. And it's beautiful. It's matter of fact. It's the how did somebody say it? The extraordinary ordinariness of it.
Exactly. It's just yeah. It's just a normal experience, like a bunch of other just pretty straightforward experiences.
Yeah.
And it's super
well, and it brings
cool
up.
And special in that
well,
it is.
In its way.
In its own way, yeah. In the sense that you can, you know, it's this recollection, this moment that you can, like I said, play with. Like you can carry it into these other situations and say, what if I go into this situation feeling like that? How does that work? Oh, interesting. Hmm.
Mm, yeah, because what it brings us to is what we think is the way things are. It's not. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's what the breaking through of the reality is, right? I take X to be for granted for lifetimes. And then I realize that that's only the appearance, and Y is the reality. And that
yes.
reality is of its own nature. Wow.
Yep, it's true. And something in what you said just is helping me realize that, you know, there's sort of the practice of cultivation and kind of an intention. You know what direction you're heading, and that people describe experiences that you're thinking of. In fact, that would be good to have that experience. And then when it shows up, it isn't what I expected. And part of the gift, the luck or whatever, is knowing enough to accept it. This is not what I was expecting, but I'm going to accept it. It was like, and I'm going to accept it. And because I could see for years, things would show up, like you said, and it's like, no, that's not it. No, that's not it. It should be over here. Can't be over there.
That's right. Yes. Yes, we say no to all of what's offered until we are there to say yes. And I project, right, Rob, I just saw this. I don't know if that's true or anything, but the category of acceptance is now in the same category as the gift.
Yes. It's over there on that side. Huh.
Yes.
But
if I consult the category of expectation, it wouldn't be. And that's what actually shifts. All along, the gift has shown up, but I've been consulting the category of expectation to see whether that's the gift or not. And
yes.
As I practice, the category of expectation erodes, and so the gift is now seen in the category of acceptance, which is why it's matter of fact and it's of itself, because I'm accepting it in the same category.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yes.
It's so delightful, and then you realize that from there you can carry on that category.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. It's like I'm just laughing because I've been facing slightly in the wrong direction. It's like it's over here.
Well,
oh, interesting.
Well, and that is the mystery, that paradox of it, right? You have to practice like your hair is on fire, knowing that your very practice is what's standing in the way of your realization.
Yep.
The power of Alan Watts said it. But that is true, because what is seeking is absolutely going in the right direction.
Yes,
what
yes,
is resisting
true.
The seeking is going in the off direction. And we can sense that that's the case until the directions align. And that is the process.
Yes. Yeah, because it turns out there is no wrong direction and there's no...
That's exactly
there was,
right.
There was never
it's
any way to blow
illusion.
It.
There was never any way to blow it. Yes. Yes.
Anyway, thank you, thank you, thank you. Got show.
Thank you, Rob, and feel better. Next caller, you're not live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lily from Florida.
Hi, Lily.
I'm enjoying the silence between the words.
What are you seeing about the assignment?
About the assignment, it's very interesting that first there is a movement. So I'm observing and watching that.
Mm-hmm. You're observing and watching as the movement happens.
Yeah, I want to see that first.
Mm-hmm. And then you're seeing the sequence with that, the movement, sensation.
Exactly.
Is that what you're pointing to?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And what have you seen as you've worked with that?
Most movement that gives me sensation is having visit from family.
Uh-huh. Yes. Well, that will tend to bring up a lot. Yep.
Yes.
That's often a big workshop.
Yeah.
And Lily, is that for you the kind of workshop that brings up anxiety and gives you a chance to work with anxiety?
Yeah, especially the reactions to it, no?
Uh-huh.
Like anger coming up,
mm-hmm.
and not accepting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really important to see that, isn't it? Because that was a big piece of what we got in this assignment was that resistance, that not accepting it, really is the piece that creates the suffering, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did seeing that allow you some space to begin to practice accepting all of it?
Yes, and giving myself more space to breathe.
Mm.
Putting that breathing on the first, and not the movements, maybe something like that.
Yeah. Well, if I'm following what you're saying, Lily, in other words, practicing where normally all of those, that sequence happens so quickly and unconsciously, right? Your family's there, something happens, and just boom, boom, boom. Before
yeah.
we know it, you know, we're way down the line into some pretty, you know, hard suffering. This is
yeah.
wrong, they're wrong, I'm wrong, the situation's wrong, you know, I don't want it, I don't like it, I'm terrible, they're terrible, you know, whatever it is. But to practice breathing so that you get to be there, that's really,
yeah.
it's a very simple practice, but very profound and often challenging.
Very relieving, really.
Yes. Did you say relieving?
Relieving or freeing, no? A freeing movement.
Yes.
Breathing.
It really is. I mean, because truly, Lily, if we could do that in every moment, simply have all of the attention on the breath here with whatever it is, exactly as it is, I mean, that's it. That's everything right there. That is freedom.
Yes, wonderful. Really.
Yeah, it is wonderful. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining, Lily.
Yes. Love you.
Take good care.
Julie. And here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next caller.
Hi, it's Emily.
Hey, Emily.
Hi. Oh, gosh, I just really see that anxiety, right? In that desire not to be called for that. And I was noticing the ways that ego wants to help me with my anxiety by, mm-hmm. you know, at a difficult time like this that I'm having is, like, I get an excuse not to get in the queue, like, trying to help me out by relieving some anxiety that can be caused by getting in the queue. And then the other thing is, giving me an allowance to eat as much sugar as I want. Like, mm-hmm. that's the ways that it's going to help me.
Mm-hmm. What an absolute important insight, right? That clarity. Because,
yeah.
So I love the way you said it, right, Emily, because
actually, hang on a minute.
Can you hear me, Emily?
Yeah, now I can.
Okay. Well, so here there are two different processes that you're calling our attention to. You're in the queue, and what you're noticing the voice is telling you to do is, there's a way in which you can deal with that anxiety of being in the queue. And the same thing is, the situation is difficult, and the way to deal with that situation, the anxiety, the disease around that situation, is to have sugar. So in this, in both cases, there's a way in which what's really going on is the discomfort of it's the ego attempting to protect itself rather than to assist you, but that's how it's framed, which is why we don't catch on to it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're present and you're a practitioner, you do.
Mm-hmm. It's framed as it's trying to help me deal with the anxiety.
Yes, it's mitigating the feeling that you're having. And I project that when you get in the queue, you're very present. There mm-hmm. is all the attention here. And so the unease that I'm experiencing is really that ego unease, right? Not what you are experiencing. It's what the ego is experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing in difficult situations. We tend to be more here than gone when something is requiring our attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
So yeah,
being here means that other process is not getting fed, and so somehow the attention needs to be diverted to it. And so as soon as it gets diverted, I become a me who's having this experience of discomfort that I can't stand, or anxiety that I can't stand, that I need to go somewhere and do something in order to dissipate that feeling.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I'm seeing how I see how the mentor wants to help me with anxiety too. Just by being really present. And what the guy talked about in the recording is being for how I would be for other people, like being able to be that way for myself, and not going off in fear stories, which, you know, have actually proved wrong, like things I thought they're going to turn out a certain way. And, you know, that I just had all the reason in the world to be afraid. And then they didn't turn out that way. Like, that happened twice. And
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so, there again, right, is the insight. Here is the voice of conditioned mind starting to harangue me with all kinds of ways in which it can be helpful, and instead of really going with it, there is the ability to turn the attention to the process that will actually be helpful. So we call that process turning to the wisdom, love, and compassion for guidance. And so you do that, right? Once I've gotten that conversation is not helpful, and it sounds like recently it's been proven wrong, then I need to go with my experience rather than my belief. So instead of going off with the story of fear, which is proven to be not true and actually only setting me up for suffering, I do what works. I turn to the mentor, and I have a completely different experience.
Mm-hmm.
We categorize that as practice success, right? Only.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's just how I would want someone to be with me. Like, even if something mm-hmm. scary was going on that was real, I would mm-hmm. want someone to just be like, "Well, it's going to be okay. Whatever happens, however it turns out, it's going to be okay. Like, there's no reason to be afraid. Let's just be here.
And that really is the point, which we kind of missed, which was the entire focus of that class, that the guided imagery that Sherry talked about, and the First Noble Truth that we're looking at in the year long, right? What I need in the situation is not to be told that my experience is invalid. What I really want is someone to be there with me in the experience. It's exactly what you said. And when we catch on to that, that's why we turn to compassion, because that is the way to be with the experience. Where conditioning mm-hmm. wants to avoid it, distract us from it, reject it, negate it, dismiss it, tell us that it's not true, go away from it. What I want is someone to be with me through it. And there it is. Not negate me in it, right? And yeah. So we want to turn to the practice that can do that. Yeah.
The nicest, when I was in the waiting room by myself while my wife was having surgery, the nicest text I got was from my aunt who said, with you in love and compassion, whatever it is, you will get through it. And I just, I felt like that just included everything, like whatever it is.
That's right.
Just kind of accepting of everything that you will get through it. Yeah.
Yes. And you'll get through it, meaning you will get through it. Not, it's going to be better. It's all going to be peaches and roses and all of that.
Right.
You are adequate to whatever it is, and there, I'm with you through that.
Right.
Yeah.
And
that's
acceptance.
The unconditional nature. And acceptance. Yes, it's horrible. I know what
could
you're
be
experiencing.
That.
It could be that. Yes, it could be that. But even that, I'm there for you.
Yeah.
Even through that, I'm there for you.
Yeah. So, yeah, seeing a lot. Okay.
Yes, stay close, Emily. We're here for you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Emily. And here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi. Thank you. This is Lori in North Carolina.
Hey, Lori.
I'm just so moved by you know, what we're looking at and what we're practicing with and hearing everybody. There's something that I had the grace, I think, the other day. I've been in a state of worry, anxiety about something that's coming up this week that I have a really large part of organizing and putting together. And and I just love hearing "Can't Blow It." It's like, oh, I can't blow it. And so when I was,
Lori, I missed that one. What was that? What did you just say?
I said I can't blow it. Whatever.
Yes.
And actually, so what really got clear was the difference between trusting that and believing some story, and what I heard really clearly was that, you know, just, oh, and the other part of it, I think it was trusting and also realizing that it's not about me. I'm not there to perform something or to get a particular outcome. What I am here for is to be just as available to life as I can be. And that there, again, there's no criteria about how that looks. So it was just so crystal clear that, it's not the ego wants to take a charge of this and say, well, you got to do this right or that. And I'm just going, you know, that isn't it at all. And the theme of this and that we're doing together is trust. And I thought, that's perfect. That's really what I want to be having while I am there with people, trusting that what comes through me comes from life, that I'll be available as much as I can be, and I can't blow it. So it's sort of like all that came together, which has been so reassuring, because the worry has so many, like, all kinds of little angles about it, you know, and wake up at night, and what about this, what about that? And it's just like, oh, my gosh, I'm so grateful for this workshop that where I'm really practicing with not going in that direction, and also of having access and practicing kindness to the experience of being alive and of recollection. So there's just this deep gratitude that I have, because it's really timely that there's something in my life that's stirring, right, that can really create, and ego can really, want into. And also that there's all of this practice that would say, that's not really the way to go.
Exactly. And, you know, that piece that you were, go ahead, Lori.
I just said,
Yeah, that piece that you were saying, you know, there's so many angles to it. You know, middle of the night, there's this piece, there's that piece, there's that piece. And it's so funny because, as you say, you know, gratitude that things like this come up in our lives that almost force us to this place of clarity, because otherwise there's too much, right? To go to conditioned mind,
right,
to try to manage that level, it's going to be endless, the things that it will come up with to worry about and to manage and to figure out. And so then with the gift of that workshop in conjunction with this assignment and hearing all of Sangha and all of that, you really got to that beautiful, it's amazing the places of clarity people are getting to with this, that feels so much like the crux of what Sherry was talking about in one piece of it, that the biggest difficulty for us is that we can't tell the difference. And that the clarity you're describing is that you're seeing that difference. You're seeing the lies of what the voices say versus the clarity of what is, and that place of, no, you cannot blow it. It's impossible. It's what Rob was pointing out as well.
Yeah, that was really helpful. You know, I really appreciate, you know, your comment, your reflection. And something that occurred to me is how the whole thing about the gift of Sangha, and so that we're all, you know, on this particular adventure, and the discoveries along the way are so, for me in particular, that it's like, yes, yes, yes to these discoveries. So that I can find it within myself and claim it, you know, as far as, yeah, that's a beautiful practice, and that I'm not alone. You know, it's the back to the, that we're not ever alone in what we're doing, and also that I can call and talk about this in a way that just is like, oh, just every day, this is what happens. We get identified, we get caught in stories, and here we are. Here is the possibility of recollecting true nature, and then we have all the guidance around how that happens.
Yes, yes, exactly. That all pieces of it really are. This is a place where we can talk about all of it. We can talk about when we're not in that clarity, when we realize that we're being bamboozled by something. We can bring the insights that we have around it, you know, the excitement of the that comes with that clarity, that all of it, this is a forum really for all of that, because everyone here understands that we are all going through the same thing. At you know, base, we're all the same thing, that true nature, and we get tortured with the same conditioning that everyone does.
Yeah, I've had torture going on in other directions, and you know, even to say it and to hear you say that, it's like there's a deep sort of reassurance that, oh, that's just what happens. Making that it is so matter of fact, instead of, oh God, this is really real. Oh, how could you have done this or that? And instead, it's like, oh boy, that can happen. And once again, here we are to explore it together. And I just feel so much. I feel so much support, and also just all this reassurance, kind of day by day, about how we are doing it. That there is a way to do what we're doing, which is so. Gosh, it's so grounding and settling in my whole spirit and my whole body and all parts of me. Because, oh yeah, there is a way to do
this. Exactly. Yeah. And such a huge part of what the Buddha taught, right? There is a way to end suffering. We don't have to do it. It's not a moral thing. It doesn't make you, you know, good or bad or right or wrong. It's possible to do it. And this is the training to do it. That's what we're all talking about now.
Well, yeah, it's possible, and here's our training. And so just such great deep gratitude for everybody, you know, for all of us as we're on this path together. It really provides support that I find so necessary. So, gosho, yeah.
Yeah, gosho, and it sounds like the workshop is going to continue this week, so have fun with that.
I plan to have a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Lori. And next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Melissa in Hawaii.
Hey, Melissa.
Hey. What I saw over the past week was kind of a combination between what was in the museum's newsletter and Sherry's assignments. I think what I noticed was that there was this line in the Musings newsletter about looking for what creates unhappiness instead of looking for what creates happiness. And that really resonated because I think that the anxiety that I experience often has come from looking for what might cause unhappiness. And in that instance, it's like the little one inside would be ego-generated. But then what I heard in the second assignment, the second recording from Sherry, was that the little one or whatever, I don't even know what to call it, but she distinguished this thing between when ego creates a little one and when karma is there and we do want to treat it with compassion and kindness as though it were a little child. And that kind of blew my mind, like the difference between those two, when ego is creating a little child and when something just arrives and needs to be cared for.
Yes.
And when something just arrives and needs to be cared for, I don't even see that as anxiety. That just feels like an opportunity to heal, whereas the other one is sort of being generated by ego, and that does feel like anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yes, what clarity and the nuance of the insight, right? So the first clue, and you know, Melissa, as you described this, the thing that is so delightful is the coherence comes together in all of these threads forming a pattern, right? You don't even see it as that, but that's what happens. Something, and something else comes together, and a piece of the barrier dissolves for us, right? So in the first case, that place of, wait a second, there is either the opportunity to look for happiness or the opportunity to look for unhappiness. And the ego process is always looking for unhappiness, which is why unhappiness is the outcome of a process of unhappiness, right? And that place of, okay, and if I extend that, where the dots connect to the other piece of it is the place of, if there's something to attend to, then one attends to it. There is no unease or discomfort around that because it's simply how life attends to life. There's a distinction between that and that story of anxiety, which needs to be attended to, which only propagates the negativity, the unhappiness. And so the ability to distinguish between that, it's ego-generated if it continues to generate ego and suffering. It's life-generated when it dissipates the ego and affirms life.
Yes, it's almost, it feels to me almost like the difference between, you know, it's almost like when I finally saw, you all helped me last year see that grief is love, because that can feel very uncomfortable in my body, but then there is a difference between grief and ego creating some miserable story. It's like that difference.
Right. Yes, because the grief passes through, whereas, I mean, it's the quality that we're catching on, right? One is a story that is made up to produce a sensation, and the other is a sensation that passes through.
Yes, and
you
it's...
You have that experience, but it's an experience in a point in time, not a continuous, long, drawn-out, protracted, repetitive process that keeps misery in place.
Yes, and it's like the ego is generating one, and like you're saying, it just goes on, it never ends, whereas life generates the other, so life, I feel like the karma stuff arrives the way sort of synchronicities do, like I get, you know, wisdom dropped in, and wonderful things, joy, all sorts of wonderful things come in, and every now and then a drop of karma comes in, and that feels far different, and like you're saying, doesn't go on and on.
Yes. And when I don't know what you mean by the karma comes in, but what I project, right, Melissa, is oftentimes the karma is there for us to see through. But if we get pulled into the karma, then we have the karmic experience.
I think I don't even know what karma, but
okay, good. All right, neither do I. Right, it's a word we make up as we say in this practice, to explain things that are otherwise unexplainable.
Yeah.
And the experience of it is the story, the predisposition towards suffering that I have assists me to see beyond it. That's what we say. We're born of karma. We're heir to it. It's going to support us and it's going, right? It's all of it. There isn't anything that isn't karma.
Oh, good Lord. I really don't know what karma is then. The way I was seeing it was, you know, if I'm not looking for unhappiness, if I'm not generating a story, if I'm really being with life, all sorts of things drop in, and sometimes something uncomfortable drops in, and I was calling that karma.
Uh-huh. Well, let's call it something uncomfortable drops in, and then there's a reaction to it, or life attends to it. If there's a reaction to it, there's unease, and that's anxiety, right, for you. And if life attends to it, it just moves through.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then what is karma?
Well, that question I think I would ask you to call in and talk to Sherry about on open air.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Marissa. And here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next caller. Hello?
Hello, this is Susan from Iowa.
Hey, Susan.
Hi. So I wasn't going to put myself in the queue. I haven't for a while. And what I noticed around that was it took me the longest time to start doing recording and listening.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't like the way my voice sounded.
Mm.
Then I got pretty comfortable with it, and the mentor was mentoring, and it felt good.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started putting myself in the queue and sometimes getting called on and mm-hmm. listened back, I didn't like the voice, and it sounded like I couldn't be understood, and so self-hate just totally said, you aren't helping by calling in. And then today, on top of that, the anxiety was, you're not helping. Why would you put yourself in the queue? And then, and I didn't at the beginning, but then partway through, what dropped in is kind of what I've been, the process I've been working with was all the things that I think, the judgments that I made listening to my voice are just the judgments that my ego made. It has nothing to do with anybody else.
Well, so, congratulations, Susan. And you might even take it one more step and say the ego instead of my ego, right? Lori just pointed out it's the same process that happens to all of us, not mine.
That's right. The ego. Yeah, the ego. And so it just felt pretty big just as I was sitting here going, huh. So thank you.
That's another one of those moments of profound clarity, isn't it, that changes us?
Yes. Yes, it is. And it's so interesting to me. I guess what also occurs to me about this, especially on this call, is it's like no one could run a mile in under 4 minutes till somebody did.
Mm-hmm.
And then loads and loads and loads of people. So the experience is in the present.
Yeah. That's right. That's
amazing.
And no wonder self-hate would want to remove your voice from the conversation. Because what we see and what you just underlined is that everyone, sometimes I think it was Ashwini who talked about that each mode of intelligence, right, is part of the whole. And each one is unique. And so, yeah, self-hate is going to do everything to keep all voices out, but in this case, to keep Susan's voice out of the conversation. And you saw through that lie and realized that it's in that participation that we're all transformed.
Yes.
Thank you for reframing it so well. The ego does that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so grateful for Sangha and for this workshop, and I'm seeing a lot about it. So
mm-hmm. Very good.
Thank you.
Susan. Thanks for putting yourself in the
queue. You're welcome. Bye.
Thanks, Susan. And here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Margaret.
Hey, Margaret.
Hey. I am loving this workshop so much, and it's just helping me recollect all the things that have happened for me in practice around this. But the most, I guess, amazing one to me is how, I guess Sherry was pointing out that the body suffers with what the body didn't actually create. And I've been noticing, I had a surgery 2 months ago that I'm now in physical therapy for. And I've been doing the physical therapy from two different, one feels like identification and the other doesn't. It feels like I'm in my body, and actually like the body, it's a totally different experience. It's like the body wants to do this part of lifting my arm, and it's so easy, and I'm actually in my arm doing it. And I've had these really amazing experiences in swimming like that too. But the other way I've noticed doing it is that I'm just, it's like maybe like a puppet master is pulling the strings, or I'm not really in my body. I could be doing something else and doing these exercises. And I realized, no, I want to be, this is so interesting and amazing to be with my body doing every movement that we're doing together. I'm part of it.
So two different experiences. One feels like identification, the other doesn't. And the quality of the one that feels like identification sounds like an absence, right? And almost like a separation from, that's one piece of it. And the other is there isn't a totality, right? There isn't, this is, there's no separation from this. And so we could say in some ways, right, Margaret, to say it in the language of our practice, it's almost like the mind is making the effort. Or the attention is on the mind in a narrative of doing something rather than not in the mind, in which case we are, something is being done, right? That's the difference in the quality of the experience.
Yeah, and what I loved about it was just realizing in that you can't blow it. you can't blow this. It just feels like, like when I've been trying to say, use my tennis racket or golf, you know, when I'm not, I've just experienced that place of being in my body with it. And, you know, like it's just happening. We're just, you know, that there's no separation.
No self.
There's no mind, no self there.
Yes.
And, I'm looking at, I guess, or just being with myself in those experiences, and even adding other parts of my body that aren't in the required exercises because they're in the lower body and this is just the arm, you know. And I haven't been doing that kind of, it's just like yoga and all these other movements that my body loves. And seeing that and being with that is just so wonderful.
Yeah. Yes, and I project, right, Margaret, rather than, because as we start to talk about it, we can only talk about it in by referencing how we know it to be. And so there might be a whole bunch of inaccuracies in the way we say something. And therefore we conclude I'm in the body and I'm not separate from the body and I want to be with. All of those are attempts to point to something that is known intuitively, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't want to conclude that we know that we're in the body and that's why we're having this experience, or we're not separate from the body and that's why we're not having this experience, or whatever it is. But there's that constant attempt to refine the ability to articulate an experience, and then the ability to practice that, to have that experience. Where is the attention when that is my experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very difficult to, I guess, to feel like I'm describing as astonishing as it feels when I'm when I go from not being there to being there.
Yes, and there's the laughter and there's the astonishment. That's so much more an accurate place of going, of speaking from there, than attempting to articulate it.
Yes. Yes, and I just so appreciate everything, the surrendering to and being able to let go, to be here.
Yeah.
So very grateful for practice. This is just amazingly helpful.
Thank
to
you.
Be here. Thank you.
Yes, to be here. Thank you.
Gosho.
Yes, sir. Next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning. It's Marianne.
Hey, Marianne.
Hi. What I've noticed is I think it's like a belief that the young child felt like help couldn't come from outside, so you have to do it all on your own willpower. And by doing that in that kind of belief system is something like there's nothing wrong. I'm in control, I guess that's sort of what the thing is. So when everybody is talking about feeling anxiety, there's this belief that part of me has, I guess as the ego has, that you don't have anxiety. You never
got it,
You never feel anxious.
It's so funny. You, right? Oh, thank you. Thank you for telling me my experience. You never feel anxious.
So it's been an experiment to dig down far enough to go, oh, yeah, well, that is such a lie. because it's very hard for the ego to feel like, to feel that anxiety because it's feeling out of control.
So if I'm following Marianne, that it feels what you're seeing is that from a really young age, there was this sense of, well, you have to do it all yourself, and essentially, you know, however you would have talked about it, but you need to be in control, and so that there'll be nothing wrong, so you can be in control of all of it. So then, the conclusion is, well, I don't have anxiety because I can't.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So a lot of denial about the suffering.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have suffering. I can't have suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I have suffering, then there is, I might not be able to manage it or, yeah. So it's like this kind of the stiff upper lip to the ninth degree.
Mm-hmm. Which would work really well for conditioning, right? Because if I can't have suffering, I can't have anxiety, and that translates to, therefore, I don't, then it never gets revealed, and the suffering has a perfect, you know, hiding in plain sight kind of protection.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I've seen that. And the way I've seen it is through other people's stories.
Mm. Oh, that's great.
Somebody says something, and then it resonates in the heart, and I go, oh, yeah, oh, ouch, yeah, I get that, that,
yeah.
That there is a voice convincing me to do something that covers the anxiety.
Yeah.
And you know.
Yeah. How helpful. Yeah. How helpful to get to see the, again, I mean, we say this so often, that it's so much easier to see in someone else than in ourselves. And, you know, it's why projection is such a helpful thing in awareness practice, because you can see yourself mirrored in someone else much more directly than we can often see it in ourselves. So it sounds like you're listening to other folks and their stories, and that's allowing you to see what's going on with you.
Yes. And not only to see what's going on, but also to see maybe the way out.
Mm. Lovely. Yep.
So just deep appreciation and, well, you know, just I guess I just wanted to out ego on this and say, I see how you have been, how ego has been preventing me from seeing my own suffering.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Jig's up. She's on the team now, right? She's on the practice team. You can't have her, because that's it, right? That's a process like you're describing, Marianne, and I'm sure we, you know, each person has their version of it, is meant to keep us separate. Pull us off from the herd so that we'll have all of our attention on it. We'll believe what it tells us. We'll do what it says we need to do in order to survive. But in what you're describing, what you're seeing is, no, I see you. I'm calling you out on your game, and I'm joining the team that's actually on my side.
Yes, and that works on one other way, because I have felt isolated most of my life. Well, so, and that, what I see is ego has isolated me as a way to keep me from seeing what's there, or to experience, or to be separate so that they might have it, but I don't.
Right. And that can feel so believable in that place.
Yeah, and it's such a crock.
It's such a crock.
Anyway,
and when, yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just simply going to say that, and it's such a crock, and we see that when we have the kind of realization that you're talking about.
Yeah, and you know, the Easter Bunny didn't bring me any chocolate today, but I feel like I've got a bigger egg.
Yes.
More important.
What's that, Marianne?
It was more, I feel like I've got a bigger egg that's more important and more nourishing.
Right. Amen. And not to get too corny, but what dropped in when you said that was, perhaps you got the rebirth that we all look for, right? That freedom.
Yeah. Thank you for seeing. Yeah. Thank you so much, Gesho.
Yeah. Thanks, Marianne. Gesho.
Thanks, Marianne. And Marianne, I can't unmute you. Would you please call back in or mute yourself? Thank you. And I think we have time for one more caller. The next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Caller. Don't know why the queue is acting up, but hang on, let's see who I can unmute. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Renee.
Hey, Renee.
Hey. Yeah, this has been great. I've had some real experiences with it in terms of sitting with the fear and sitting through the conditioning to distract and and breathing through it, and it's very, very it's what freedom is, right? It's just describing freedom. And then just hearing all the stories as I'm sitting there with it about what's going to happen if I don't do something, you know, like if I don't eat that food or find a way to distract, or it's like you're sitting there watching the fear that it's trying to tell you that something bad's going to happen if you don't get away from it, so to speak. Yeah.
Yes. Well, the word that really caught my attention was that's the freedom. Because when we talk about freedom, we're talking about the freedom from the conditioning. So if you can sit there and watch it do what it does, but not let it talk you into doing what it wants you to do, then you're free of it.
Yeah.
Yeah? So there it is. Yeah. Eat this food. Yeah. If you don't eat this food, you're going to die. You don't eat this food and you don't die. So you're free of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the distance that we're attempting to get, right? Which is why it escalates and produces a level of sensations or an escalated conversation. We can't stand that. It's not that we're afraid of what it's saying we should be afraid of. We just can't stand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
and there
exactly.
You go. You sit on the cushion, hold on to it. It's like in the fear book, right? We have the finally we get desperate enough to have the courage to sit through and face it. And here I am facing it. And realize we can. And that is the freedom.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is the freedom. Yeah.
Right, that is the freedom right there in that moment. Yes.
Yes.
And that's what strikes me.
And it's nothing what it says.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. It's nothing what it says.
Well, it's just simply not what it says. It's been the theme of some of our conversations. What it says is you won't have me talking to you all the time. The sensations will disappear, the content will get resolved.
Oh,
but the freedom is the ability to sit on the cushion and watch it and not do what it says. Not to be afraid anymore.
Yeah.
Of it.
Right. Of it. And I think what I see about it is we can't sit on the cushion 24/7, right? So this was actually happening while I was driving and it was a transitional period from being off work, which is a stressful thing I do. And then when I'm off, I think I'm supposed to have all these distractions. You know, ego tells me I need to have all these things to relieve my stress. And so I'm driving and I'm feeling, oh, stop there. Oh, do this. You know, it's not only food, but sometimes it's, oh, you have to plan something for the weekend to be fun because you had such a hard week, you know, or it could be anything like that. And so, what I'm seeing is, just this moment by momentness of it. I know that's not a word, but you know, like the continuous need to be right there, to watch.
Yes. Well, and in other words, metaphorically speaking, you're always on the cushion.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Because that's what we're saying. I mean, there's a physical cushion that we sit on as a training ground to be able to practice that moment by moment in life. And that's what the experience is, because it's incessant, and therefore the attention has to be constantly vigilant.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And then I see what I've been also looking at is how does it relate to self-hate? And because sometimes there's this self-hate that is there for like, but I don't see the messages with it. You know, it's just a feeling. Or I notice like, oh, I don't want to drink my water today, or I don't want to do the exercise today. And to me, that's some sort of self-hate that's happening. And so I'm just looking at the link between that and fear and the moment by moment paying attention.
And is there something you've seen about that?
Well, I was looking at it today, and I just noticed while I was on the call, I heard a voice say, oh, don't drink that water today. You don't need it. You know, and I'm just like, oh, interesting. Like,
yes. Well, yeah. It seems that the link is that they're both in conversations.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
is a good link. Yeah. I like that.
Be afraid. Yeah. Be afraid and don't do what takes care of you.
Yeah.
There.
Worry about your health, but don't drink the water, just like on the call, on
That's
the
right.
recording.
There's the link. There's absolutely the link. The setup to make you feel bad that you have something wrong with you.
Yes, exactly. Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Renee.
Thanks. Gotcha.
Yes, sir. And Jen, that brings us to the end of this workshop, and I guess we get to look forward to more.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Ashwini. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everybody, and go happy.